As the pines were depleted and the logging industry in the lumberjack era was obviously coming to an end, the logging town of Grand Rapids in 1900 faced the need to find a new economic base to ensure the community's survival. Many of the town's businessmen supported the idea of attempting to entice developers to build a paper mill, which could utilize the water power available in the center of town, where the Grand Rapids of the Mississippi ended. And is this feasible? Is this a good idea? Well, there's lots of spruce available, the water power is there, and certainly there'd be a most enthusiastic reception in Grand Rapids for anybody who wanted to build a mill. But on the other hand, Grand Rapids is isolated, it's far away. Even just the cost of shipping paper out of Grand Rapids with its single rail line would be expensive. So it's going to be kind of a tough sell. But yes, certainly is worth pursuing. Well, we've already met Dan Gunn, as John Greenway awarded him the contract to arduously haul the heavy equipment and supplies needed by the Oliver Iron Mining Company from the Grand Rapids Railhead over the notoriously treacherous Diamond Trail to Bovee. Now, let's take a look at him in his very important Grand Rapids context. Returning to my book, no one played a larger role in carrying out the mandate to build the Grand Rapids industrial base using the water power of the Mississippi River than the owner of the Hotel Pokegama, Daniel M. Gunn. Canadian by birth, he came to the United States at the age of 20, working as a carpenter in North Dakota before moving to Minnesota. Employed in a hotel in Grand Rapids, he soon tired of, as he put it, drunken lumberjacks, and he spent most of his early career after that in Brainerd. There he operated a hotel and began a long career of public service as an elected official in Crow Wing County. In 1892, he married Ann Gibson, a prominent Brainerd family. 2 days later, he and his bride arrived in Grand Rapids to take charge of the Hotel Pokegama, which he had purchased from a Minneapolis cooperative. Grand Rapids remained Gunn's home until his death in 1932. Gunn's initial luck in his new endeavor was not the best. His hotel burned to the ground some months after his arrival. But despite difficult economic times, he managed to finance and erect a new and even more commodious structure at the same location. The citizens of Grand Rapids wasted no time in drawing upon Gunn's penchant for public service. The year of his arrival, he was elected a county commissioner, and for 2 years he was chairman of the board. A staunch Republican, he was elected a representative to the state legislature in 1894 by a large majority and returned for 2 more terms. A few years later, he carried on the tradition that had been started by C.C. McCarthy, becoming the town's second state senator. Dan Gunn was a big, tall, strong man. He was quietly bluff in manner and oriented towards physical activity. He dearly loved the woods of northern Minnesota. His friend, C.C. Kelly, remember he's the early timber cruiser who was also a journalist and has left some valuable source material behind for the period. C.C. Kelly, who also wrote for the Minneapolis Journal, described Gunn as a mighty man with rod and gun. In an article in the Journal in 1900, Kelly described Gunn's hunting lodge, which is revealing of his interests and character. It was located in the Big Fork Wilderness. The lodge was inaccessible enough to limit its use to no more than several hunting or fishing expeditions per year. For Gunn, the arduous trip to the camp was a pleasant outing. After traveling as far as Deer River by rail, Gunn and his guests had to take a bone-crunching ride up an Itasca Lumber Company logging road to a point 9 miles from the lodge. From there, they had to pack it. If hunting was successful, the return was even more difficult. As Kelly commented, any gentleman who packs a deer that distance has earned a warranty deed to it. In another journal article, Kelly further illustrated Gunn's zestful approach to life in northern Minnesota. Informed one early spring day that the ice had gone out on Pokegama, Gunn immediately, despite windy, chilling, and inclement weather, decided that fishing was in order. Accompanied by a far less vigorous friend from out of town, Gunn harnessed his horses and set out for the lake. He intended to rent a boat, but on such early in the season arrival, he found the boathouse locked and the proprietor nowhere to be found. That did not deter Gunn, who journeyed along the lakeshore till he found a farmer who rented him a boat. The men set out on a rough, white-capped lake and headed for the far side. Before long, Gunn's rocked and buffeted friend was ill and desperate. Gunn simply deposited him on shore in the care of some Indian acquaintances and went on with his angling. Not until the sun was low in the west did an empty-handed Gunn decide that the fishing opener was at an end. John C. Greenway, the energetic former Rough Rider who had arrived to begin his career as the Oliver Iron Mining Company's general superintendent for the new Canisteo District, soon proved himself physically an even match and more for Gunn. The two soon became fast friends. The relationship was mutually beneficial. Gunn was able to aid Greenway in local matters, and Greenway provided some important opportunities for the expansion of Gunn's business interests. Gunn's good friends, John Greenway and C.C. McCarthy, had had the best of education, but Gunn's formal schooling had ended early. Books were never an important part of his life, but he faithfully read the Wall Street Journal and subscribed to the National Geographic magazine. Although he was taciturn, formal, and preferred to be addressed as Mr. Gunn, even by those who knew him well, he had a wry sense of humor. Common sense and integrity, along with a commitment to serving the public without self-gain, were Dan Gunn's strongest points. Whether for a personal loan for some good purpose or for his aid in the work of yet another board or commission, he rarely turned down a request. Gunn was equally at home in the remote wilderness or in the corridors and meeting rooms of the Minnesota State Capitol. He moved easily in the social circles of top political figures, and he became one of the state's widely respected politicians. Gunn lived at the fashionable St. Paul Hotel when attending to his legislative duties, so when he returned home and emphasized that his Hotel Pokegama was strictly first class and modern, he had a meaningful base for comparison. Gunn enjoyed card playing. Horses were another of his major interests, and he always prided himself on his fine driving teams. Gunn was particularly influential in the development of Grand Rapids. He played a major part in acquiring the North Central Agricultural Station that led to improved farming in the area. When Gunn announced in 1896 that the state had selected his proposed site near Grand Rapids, the town was flag-bedecked within hours. He served as the town's mayor for several years, and his name is linked with civic concerns ranging from the installation of a downtown drinking fountain to better maintenance of local roads. He served at various times with the Cemetery Association, the County Hospital Association, the town's Library Board, and the County Fair Board. But of all Gunn's contributions, none was so important as his firm dedication to the task of finding the capital and expertise necessary to establish a paper mill in Grand Rapids. So we got a pretty strong guy here who is entering in on the scene, and he immediately undertakes his charge, and he gets a very quick hit. In March of 1898, the Herald Review proclaimed that, "Today, manufacturers are knocking at our portals seeking to gain admission to the realm of wealth which nature has so generously lavished upon this locality. A mysterious consortium, publicly identified only as capitalists from the East, had made a proposal to the village council. They offered to build a $300,000 pulp and paper mill in Grand Rapids if the village would provide what they called a small bonus. The council, in favor of the proposal, held a public hearing on such an important issue, and after that held an election as to whether the people of Grand Rapids would support a bond issue for $10,000 that would pay for what the company had required. And that election passed very easily. After that resolution, on which the entire council had voted aye, the council returned to more mundane affairs, including the approval of expenses for boiler repairs at the pump house and consideration of a citizen complaint that a horse-drawn bus was regularly soliciting passengers in the business district of town, diverting their interests and obviously their money to a certain dance house. So back to more routine things for the consul. But the Herald Review reported that the committee and the consul had very carefully analyzed the proposal, and the newspaper suggested that readers should support with all their efforts and energy the pursuance of this great project. Another article referred to the proposed mill as the nucleus of our future and prosperity, and without equivocation exhorted readers to vote yes. The election vote was overwhelmingly in favor of the expenditure, and then nothing. Probably the loss of the great opportunity had to do with the fact that adequate measures had not been taken to obtain the necessary permission to dam the Mississippi River. Whatever happened, the Eastern capitalists withdrew their offer, dashing all those high hopes in Grand Rapids.